I imagine that as you go through life, you will read 5 or 6 books that you will think of when you're much older as being the books that were the most influential in affecting the way you think. For me, one of these books would be J.Z. Young's Doubt and Certainty in Science. I think it is the kind of a book that you will, if you appreciate it, if it somehow meshes with you, you will be reading it for years. You can't get it, so to speak, the first time. I've been lecturing from it now for several years. And again last night, I was up till wee small hours with it. It's an interesting thing to go back to a book once a year. It's never the same book. You understand things from it that you hadn't understood before, if it's a good book, if it is one that can serve this function. This is one of the marks of a good book, I think. That it is a means of measuring your growth. And if you like this book, it is one that you can use that way. Now it is deceptively easy to read, I'm afraid. For some of you it will be, for some of you maybe not. I don't know. The point is, I think the author writes rather well. He does not appear to have the need to impress you with technical terminology, and he knows enough not to make long, complex sentences for the most part, so that the book is quite easy to read. But what it is about, is much too important, much too pervasive with regard to the study of yourself, of man, to be read very fast or to be understood all at once. Now what it's about in general is what goes on in the brain. What might go on in the brain, pardon me. What might possibly go on in the brain. What conceivably would go on in the brain. When we do what we do, particularly when we communicate. The author is a biologist. He's an anatomist in his most highly specialized interest. But he is not just an anatomist. He has studied behavior, the behavior of the octopus, among other forms of life. He's particularly interested in behavioral science. And he is basically a biologist. Now this is important because to him the biologically significant thing about the human being is all that behavior which has to do with communication. Biologically, this is what is significant to him. I think most biologists and most people who are not biologists would tend to think that communication is not especially biological. But this is behavior which distinguishes the biological species called man. This has some implications. This means that what is distinctive about the human being then, biologically, is his capacity for cooperation rather than competition. If you leave out all considerations, or most considerations, having to do with communication in studying man, then you study him as though he were an animal like other animals. Or you study him in the spirit of 19th or 18th century physics. He's an oxygen burner. He's a food burner. He's an energy machine. He transforms food into energy. But any animal does this. Any organism does this. This is not distinctively human. This is not what about you is important. That you eat and digest food and turn it into the chemical elements that make up your tissues. Any organism does this. Cockroach does this. The fact that you walk, this isn't what is important about you. The fact that you are locomotor, all animals are locomotor. Some of them much more than you are. One thing about you that is biologically significant is that you think, you speak, you symbolize, and so you communicate, and so you can cooperate. And so, as human beings, we tend to assemble, to congregate. And congregating, we exchange information. Now, he makes a great deal of the fact that we do this and that this has an effect upon the way the brain itself develops. Your brain simply responds to the input that affects it. It is an informational input. And so your brain comes to be structured, as it were, in such a way as to handle information, as to process information. So all of the distinctively human ailments or shortcomings or disorders have to do with inefficiency in handling information. Reading the papers, it was interesting to think of them in this way. If you think of aging as a process of reduction in the efficiency in handling information and responding to and processing and making use of and evaluating new information, the age range of this class is from early childhood to very old age. There, I won't elaborate that. In developing, according to Jung, we have in order to handle information, in order to receive it, to send it, and to process it inside our heads, we have developed what we call languages. And we've developed what we call memory. And these days, having developed computers, we talk about memory somewhat differently from the way we used to. You can have memory in many forms. It involves the storage of information in forms that can be retrieved. Okay. This is a long distance call. Mrs. Wade says the man can't wait. And, I wired him to call me.